Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time patient advocate for Dan.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that enjoys a wide range of cinema and doesn't always agree on our individual choices. But the three of us are in agreement that while he doesn't always make great films, Steven Soderbergh is someone whose work we're always interested in seeing. And that goes for his latest effort, the comedy drama about the value of art and the prospect of art forgery, titled The Christophers. We'll discuss our reaction to the film, which features the presence of the great Shakespearean stage actor Ian McKellen, before then turning to the latest film by the Palestinian-American director Sharian Dabis, titled All That's Left of You. Let's begin with a bit of Soderbergh. If there's any kind of an artistic question to apply to The Christophers, one of the most relevant involves what is more worth examining, the great Ian McKellen's diction or the classic facial features of his co-star, the Ghanaian-British actress Michaela Cole. McKellen plays the one-time celebrity-famous artist Julian Sklar, while Cole plays a much younger struggling artist and part-time art forger named Laurie Butler. She has been hired by Sklar's children, played by Jessica Gunning and James Corden, to complete a series of Sklar's paintings called The Christophers, which they hope to sell for millions. Nothing goes as anyone planned, though Julian and Laurie do develop the kind of bond that each, not to mention those of us in the audience, are likely to find satisfying. This is not Soderbergh at his best, but even so-so Soderbergh manages to make a simple story interesting. Of course, it helps to have in McKellen one of his era's great stage talents to work with, not to mention Cole, his talented co-star, whose ability to handle dialogue is matched by her riveting likeness to an Egyptian queen of 3,000-plus years ago.
I feel like we talk about Steven Soderbergh on this show more than any other director, except maybe Terrence Malick.
He seems like he puts out a film every 6 months.
Yeah. And, he's releasing these movies all the time. I like that he's also, still mixing up his style. He's still trying new things. And this is a movie, The Christophers, about artistic stagnation. Amongst other things. But I think it's safe to assume that Soderbergh isn't going to succumb to that himself anytime soon. He's maybe at his most prolific. But despite his restlessness, he does often return to similar themes and similar genres. And this one starts out like one of the classic heist narratives that he loves so much. This forger has to infiltrate the castle of the great artist. She has to get a hold of these lost masterworks that have kind of developed this mythology around them. And then she has to finish them without his knowing and get a cut of the inevitable auction sales. But the movie quickly develops into something different because these two characters kind of see past one another's guard right away. And I wanted
to play cat and mouse with each other for a while.
But then they realize that they're more simpatico than they initially thought. And we also discovered that they have
a history
that only one of them was aware of and that we are not aware of. And so that adds a wrinkle to things. And The Christophers, it should be noted, was written by Ed Solomon, who is most famous for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the Men in Black movies. But he also wrote what I think is maybe Steven Soderbergh's most underseen, really good movie of recent years. It's this kind of neo-noir film called No Sudden Move. But the movie that The Christophers reminded me of, the Soderbergh movie that it most reminded me of, was a movie he made in 2020 called Let Them All Talk. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
With Meryl Streep, where it was all the people on the cruise ship. Not only because they share a particular narrative twist that I won't reveal, but because both of them are examining the ideas of mortality and legacy. Like, what happens when you feel like your best years are behind you? What do you leave behind when you're gone? And so ultimately, I think The Christophers, I might have liked it more than you, Dan. I agree that it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. And honestly, I don't know if Soderbergh has made a great movie in a while, but he's making all these low-key, kind of low-budget, usually really solid genre movies.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that when I say it's a so-so Soderbergh, that doesn't mean I don't think that this movie in so many ways is a little gem.
The intriguing thing to me about this film is not only that we do get to see the great Ian McKellen. He is fabulous. So I said to Dan, I hope this is an Oscar nomination that's not forgotten when next year comes around. Because he is this curmudgeon, or at least that's the impression that we get from him. And he had been involved previously in this television show titled Art Fight that was like one of those bad British baking shows. I don't know. I've never watched any, so I don't know. But where the people yell at these aspiring artists.
You might get some letters in the mail by saying bad British baking show, by the way, because people do love those. You
know? All of them are good?
I don't know if all of them are good, but there's one in particular that is quite lovely. But anyway, that's not
okay, point. That's an aside. A show where aspiring with Shark Tank, is that a better example?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or like
a
American
show where
Idol,
hopeful
know.
People come on expecting feedback and instead they get yelled at.
Yeah,
so I don't know what
they're showing off their art and great artist critique.
Britain's
is.
Artists have talent.
Sure, there you go.
Something such as that, at any rate. But now he makes money by filming these little cameos, like Happy Birthday, because his voice is so distinctive. But he has to do it in sort of this cranky way. And people pay him to give these cameo readings and greetings to others. And so in The Christophers, that's how he makes his money now. He was a famous, well-known artist back in the day. The assistant, so-called assistant, Michaela Cole, she's also very talented, but in her own way, she's not risen to, the status that she should probably have. And so we meet her working in a food truck. So that's her part-time gig. And then we find out that she is an art restorer and, as Nathan mentioned, an art forger. The thing that I liked best about this particular movie were the asides. In The Christophers, Ian McKellen, he really has this love-hate relationship with his children, mostly hate. And he calls them all these different names. He refers to them, as his, like, toxic offspring and so forth and so on. But he also has these witticisms. So there's this concept in the law of heirs apparent. But he calls his children the heirs abhorrent. And he does that throughout. But it really is, as Nathan indicated, it's the relationship that grows between these two people. And the title refers to this unfinished series of paintings that Ian McKellen had done many years ago, as Nathan explained. And I think that, they find out that they have so much in common, even though on the surface it appears as though they have nothing in common.
Yeah, I just want to make the point that I think most people will know McKellen from the Lord of the Rings series, in which he played Gandalf the Grey. And then, and he was great in that. But this guy is, of his generation, probably the best Shakespearean actor, stage actor. In The Christophers, he bites off every single line. He is so good. His character, Julian Sklar, becomes someone you both hate, despise, and yet admire and can't get enough of. And I also want to say that Michaela Cole, who I never knew before, she could just walk on the screen and my attention immediately goes to her. But she ends up being every bit the responsible acting partner to McKellen.
Yeah, I think it's the contrast between those performances that makes The Christophers ultimately entertaining, because you have McKellen doing this kind of garrulous thing that he does so well. It made me think a lot about Peter O'Toole's work in
yes.
My Favorite Year.
Yes, but, exactly.
But there's also a little bit of McKellen's own performance from Gods and Monsters, where he played this reclusive filmmaker, James Whale. So there's also a sadness there. And then Michaela Cole, who people might know from the miniseries I May Destroy You, which got a lot of attention a few years ago, she has this stillness about her mm-hmm. that makes you want to lean in. Mm-hmm. Because it's sort of playful, but there's sort of an unsettling edge to it. I think that what keeps this movie, The Christophers, from ultimately being great, though, is that even though it has this great perception for these people. I don't think it has a great feeling for the art itself. It's more about the circumstances behind the work and less about the actual creation of the work.
Although she does, explain. She's very knowledgeable about different things, explains his paintings. There's also this theme of sexual orientation and the struggles at different time periods with, you know, how that affected the two protagonists differently. The other thing I would say is big shout out to the set design folks. Because this is this guy's world has expanded into two different apartments at three floors each, and just the little touches of things that he's gathered, whether you consider it detritus or memorabilia, in the Christophers, the set design folks did a great job.
And that was our discussion of the Christophers. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the film All That's Left of You. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Spokane Public Radio is a community organization. We don't have stocks or shareholders. We rely on you. Those able to give back can do so by starting a sustaining membership, a recurring monthly donation to SPR. Your gift at $10 to $20 a month keeps our programming free for the entire region. When you give what you can, you invest in the Inland Northwest. To get started, go to SpokanePublicRadio.org and hit the red donate button. Thanks.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss Steven Soderbergh's The Christophers. Let's now turn to a historical look at a tale that, over the decades, has become more and more a familiar news story. And that story concerns the circumstances involving the founding of Israel. But instead of keying on the Jewish immigrants coming into Palestine, this film, titled All That's Left of You, written and directed by the Palestinian-American filmmaker Sharian Deviz, focuses on the people being displaced. Following an incident involving two young men during the 1988 so-called First Intifada, Deviz's film cuts to a woman, played by Deviz herself, who insists that she tell us about her son. But first, she says, we must know about his grandfather. And thus, Deviz begins her tale of three generations of Palestinians and the travails they endure over a 70-year-plus era. Powered by a talented cast, including Deviz and Saleh Bakri as a man who loses the respect of his young son, All That's Left of You is likely to feel divisive to some viewers, even if Deviz chooses to end her film with a compelling, if somber, message of acceptance and, just possibly, hope.
This film was Jordan's entry for the Oscars, for the Academy Awards this past year. And as Dan indicated, All That's Left of You, again, a little bit of an unwieldy title, but it is a multi-generational. So three generations of Palestinian men are showcased. But it sort of works backwards and then flips back and forth because we begin in 1988. But we're going to go all the way back to the story of the grandfather.
In 1948.
Yeah. We see how it appeared as though this family was living this somewhat idyllic life, had a nice place that was, you know, in a more urban area. But
with an orange grove,
they grow oranges. So they were orange growers. And according to Grandpa, their oranges were famous all over the world. And even Queen Elizabeth had eaten some of their oranges. And so they seemed very happy. And all of a sudden, things start to happen that interrupt their idyllic life. So All That's Left of You focuses on the initial displacement of the family members, the male family members, dad in particular, as there's a regime change, in 1948. Then we are going to focus on the incident in 1988 that results in a young man's being shot. But that's not really sort of the essence of what's going on. I mean, the Palestinian history, yes, but it's really about people and commonalities because we don't know, or I didn't know, at least initially, who DeBeese, who's playing the mom, grandmother figure from 1988, I don't know who she's talking to initially because she's telling this story. And then it becomes clear why she's having this conversation with this particular guy. So it's really about, or at least I perceived, that this was, you know, a little bit more multi-layered than I had anticipated. It is difficult every time that we on the show have talked about these similarly themed movies because we know listeners have very different perspectives on what's happening, especially in this region. But this is, you know, an inside look. I thought All That's Left of You benefited greatly from the excellent performances of everyone in the cast.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's essentially broken into, I guess, four chapters, and then it keeps kind of shifting its perspective down through this family's lineage as time goes on. And I was thinking, I couldn't help but think in the opening moments of All That's Left of You. So this is an epic family saga where oranges are a central metaphor, as you mentioned. And what does that make you think of? The Godfather, maybe? Because that's what I thought about.
Yes. I thought about orange groves in Florida and racism in the United States and displacement and apartheid and so forth.
Yeah, it's a loaded metaphor, obviously. And like The Godfather, I think the strongest thing about this movie is its sense of the passage of time. The Godfather often will jump years ahead in between scenes mm-hmm. and not telegraph to us that it's doing it, but it announces it in subtle visual ways, and so we never feel lost. And this movie is not as elegant and brilliant as one of the greatest American films ever, but it sometimes has a similar effect. For example, as the first generation of this family dies and then the next generation, the director, who as you mentioned is also a performer in the movie, doesn't announce it. She just shows their photos being added to a wall to signify that they have passed on. And I thought that was a really nice touch. And for me, the two most affecting chapters of All That's Left of You are the ones that are sort of in the 70s, 80s, because it shows how that dynamic between the father and his young son,
yes.
when he's still a child, is tested by the occupation. There's a scene between the two of them and this roving group of soldiers where they basically humiliate him in front of his son that I think is maybe the most tense scene in the movie.
I agree.
And changes the entire dynamic of both of those characters. And then the chapter in the present day, which closes out the movie, which I wish were even longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an epilogue here because it shows the way that places change during moments of historic strife, but also some of the ways that they actually stay the same. And I think that ultimately, I agree with you that, I mean, there's tremendous feeling behind this movie, obviously, and it's exquisitely made and acted. I do think that it's almost a little too schematic in the way that it's put together, because we're talking a lot about the structure of the movie, and that's mm-hmm. a huge part of it. And it's trying to communicate that this family is not in control of its own destiny. But I don't feel like the movie has that kind of messy unpredictability of real life that even something like The Godfather has. For instance, that the shocking moment of violence that happens halfway through, which you kind of alluded to, it has already been telegraphed to us at the beginning of All That's Left of You. So it kind of diminishes some of its narrative power when it actually comes around. But despite all those misgivings, I mean, you do get pulled into the world of these people. You do get pulled into their relationships and their inner conflicts while this actual international conflict or national conflict is happening right outside their door. So it's a very well done movie.
And I am always fascinated because I think it's an audacious choice to direct and star in the film itself. So I didn't know anything about Sharon DeBeese. She graduated from the University of Cincinnati. And so she kind of split her time between growing up in the Midwest and you know, spending time in the Middle East. Especially, she said that her family had a huge collection of Egyptian DVDs or VHS tapes, mm-hmm. and that's how she came to love the movies, you know, those movies, and then also expanded her knowledge. But an intriguing thing about her is she was actually nominated for an Emmy Award for directing in 2022, one sequence of only Murders in the Building.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, I thought
so.
That
she's
that
got
was,
range.
Yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
Exactly. I thought that was intriguing. And her first two feature films that, you know, I'm not familiar with, apparently they've been, you know, talked about as a diptych because they sort of represent being Arab in America and then being an American in the Middle East. And so, you know, so I think they sort of go together. So I'm interested in seeing what she does next, because at one point I read an interview with her and she basically said that initially she viewed herself as an activist, but she finally decided that she really could make more of an impact through these fictionalized films. And we've talked about that before, you know, about the genocide in Rwanda. There were all these documentaries that were made, but then Hotel Rwanda comes out and people paid much more attention to that. So I think that maybe she's onto something in terms of telling these stories, because we've seen so many docs in the recent past about this area of the world.
Yeah, and I can't stress enough the scene that Nathan was talking about in which the father is humiliated. It's a scene we've seen played out in other kinds of movies and other situations, but it is so powerful and it speaks so much to the relationship of the father and son and how the movie opens. It kind of leads it to that. The other thing I would say about All That's Left of You is that there's no easy answers given. There's no easy out given by anybody. Nobody, no character comes to a moment and goes, oh, yeah, I see what you're talking about. It's always left a little bit, and particularly this one scene that, Nathan, you were talking about, in which we find out exactly who she is talking to. There's no, oh, yes. It's mm-hmm. it's more realistic. This is the way life plays out.
And we should note that this movie, All That's Left of You, it has been playing at the Magic Lantern. It's also available as a digital rental, so you can watch it in many different places.
Yeah. And that was our discussion of All That's Left of You. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Steven Soderbergh's latest effort, The Christophers. Let's take this moment to thank Aaron Bratt for directing the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the young adult author Deborah Raber. Letting go doesn't mean that you don't care about someone anymore. It's just realizing that the only person you really have control over is yourself. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.